Chapter 53. Her movements. Immediately the sun had dropped behind the horizon, and before it was quite dark, she wrapped her cloak around her, softly left the house, and walked direct through the gloomy park in the direction of the old manor house. The same minute saw two persons sit down in the rectory house to share the rector's usually solitary dinner. One was a man of official appearance, commonplace in all except his eyes. The other was Edward Springrove. The discovery of the carefully concealed letters rankled in the mind of Anne Seaway. Her woman's nature insisted that Manston had no right to keep all matters connected with his lost wife a secret from herself. Perplexity had bred vexation, vexation, resentment, curiosity had been continuous. The whole morning this resentment and curiosity increased. The steward said very little to his companion during their luncheon at midday. He seemed reckless of appearances, almost indifferent to whatever fate awaited him. All his actions betrayed that something portentous was impending, and still he explained nothing. By carefully observing every trifling action, as only a woman can observe them, the thought at length dawned upon her that he was going to run away secretly. She feared for herself. Her knowledge of law and justice was vague, and she fancied she might in some way be made responsible for him. In the afternoon he went out of the house again, and she watched him drive away in the direction of the county town. She felt a desire to go there herself, and, after an interval of half an hour, followed him on foot, notwithstanding the distance, ostensibly to do some shopping. One among her several trivial errands was to make a small purchase at the druggist's. Near the druggist's stood the county bank. Looking out of the shop window, between the colored bottles, she saw Manston come down the steps of the bank, in the act of withdrawing his hand from his pocket, and pulling his coat close over its mouth. It is an almost universal habit with people, when leaving a bank, to be carefully adjusting their pockets. If they have been receiving money, if they have been paying it in, their hands swing laxly. The steward had in all likelihood been taking money, possibly on Miss Aldclyffe's account, that was continual with him. And he might have been removing his own, as a man would do who was intending to leave the country. 3. From 5 to 8 o'clock p.m. Anne reached home again in time to preside over preparations for dinner. Manston came in half an hour later. The lamp was lighted, the shutters were closed, and they sat down together. He was pale, and worn almost haggard. The meal passed off in almost unbroken silence. When preoccupation withstands the influence of a social meal with one pleasant companion, the mental scene must be surpassingly vivid. Just as she was rising, a tap came to the door. Before a maid could attend to the knock, Manston crossed the room, and answered it himself. The visitor was Miss Aldclyffe. Manston instantly came back, and spoke to Anne in an undertone. "I should be glad if you could retire to your room for a short time. It is a dry, starlight evening," she replied. "I will go for a little walk, if your object is merely a private conversation with Miss Aldclyffe." "Very well, do. There's no accounting for tastes," he said. A few commonplaces then passed between her and Miss Aldclyffe, and Anne went upstairs to bonnet and cloak herself. She came down, opened the front door, and went out. She looked around to realize the night. It was dark, mournful, and quiet. Then she stood still. From the moment that Manston had requested her absence, a strong and burning desire had prevailed in her to know the subject of Miss Aldclyffe's conversation with him. Simple curiosity was not entirely what inspired her. Her suspicions had been thoroughly aroused by the discovery of the morning. A conviction that her future depended on her power to combat a man who, in desperate circumstances, would be far from a friend to her, prompted a strategic movement to acquire the important secret that was in handling now. The woman thought and thought, and regarded the dull dark trees, anxiously debating how the thing could be done. Stealthily reopening the front door, she entered the hall, and advancing and pausing alternately, came close to the door of the room in which Miss Aldclyffe and Manston conversed. Nothing could be heard through the keyhole or panels. At a great risk, she softly turned the knob, and opened the door to a width of about half an inch, performing the act so delicately that 3 minutes, at least, were occupied in completing it. At that instant, Miss Aldclyffe said, "There's a draft somewhere. The door's ajar, I think." Apostrophe, and glided back under the staircase. Manston came forward, and closed the door. This chance was now cut off, and she considered again. The parlor, or sitting room, in which the conference took place, had the window shutters fixed on the outside of the window, as is usual in the back portions of old country houses. The shutters were hinged one on each side of the opening, and met in the middle, where they were fastened by a bolt passing continuously through them, and the wood mullion within, the bolt being secured on the inside by a pin, which was seldom inserted till Manston and herself were about to retire for the night, sometimes not at all. If she returned to the door of the room, she might be discovered at any moment, but could she listen at the window, which overlooked a part of the garden never visited after nightfall, she would be safe from disturbance. The idea was worth a trial. She glided round to the window, took the head of the bolt between her finger and thumb, and softly screwed it round until it was entirely withdrawn from its position. The shutters remained as before, whilst, where the bolt had come out, was now a shining hole 3/4 of an inch in diameter, through which one might see into the middle of the room. She applied her eye to the orifice. Miss Aldclyffe and Manston were both standing, Manston with his back to the window, his companion facing it. The lady's demeanor was severe, condemnatory, and haughty. No more was to be seen. And then turned sideways, leant with her shoulder against the shutters, and placed her ear upon the hole. "You know where," apostrophe said Miss Aldclyffe. "And how could you, a man, act a double deceit like this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, men do strange things sometimes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what was your reason, come? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a mere whim. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I might even believe that, if the woman were handsomer than Cytherea, or if you had been married some time to Cytherea, and had grown tired of her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and can't you believe it too, under these conditions, that I married Cytherea, gave her up, because I heard, that my wife was alive, found that my wife would not come to live with me, and then, not to let any woman I loved so well as Cytherea run any risk of being displaced and ruined in reputation, should my wife ever think fit to return, induced this woman to come to me, as being better than no companion at all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I cannot believe it. Your love for Cytherea was not of such a kind as that excuse would imply. It was Cytherea or nobody with you. As an object of passion, you did not desire the company of this Anne Seaway at all, and certainly not so much, as to madly risk your reputation, by bringing her here in the way you have done. I am sure you didn't, Aeneas. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so am I, apostrophe, he said bluntly. Miss Aldclyffe uttered an exclamation of astonishment. The confession was like a blow in its suddenness. She began to reproach him bitterly, and with tears. How could you overthrow my plans, disgrace the only girl I ever had any respect for, by such inexplicable doings, that woman must leave this place, the country perhaps. Heavens! The truth will leak out in a day or two. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she must do no such thing, and the truth must be stifled somehow, nobody knows how. If I stay here, or on any spot of the civilized globe, as Aeneas Manston, this woman must live with me as my wife, or I am damned past redemption. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I will not countenance your keeping her, whatever your motive may be. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you must do something, apostrophe, he murmured. You must. Yes, you must. Apostrophe, I never will, apostrophe, she said. It is a criminal act. Apostrophe, he looked at her earnestly. Will you not support me through this deception, if my very life depends upon it? Will you not? Apostrophe, nonsense. Life. It will be a scandal to you, but she must leave this place. It will out sooner or later, and the exposure had better come now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Manston repeated gloomily the same words. My life depends upon your supporting me my very life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he then came close to her, and spoke into her ear. Whilst he spoke he held her head to his mouth with both his hands. Strange expressions came over her face. The workings of her mouth were painful to observe. Still he held her and whispered on. The only words that could be caught by Anne Seaway, confused as her hearing frequently was by the moan of the wind, and the waterfall in her outer ear, were these of Miss Aldclyffe, in tones which absolutely quivered. They have no money. What can they prove? Apostrophe, the listener T asked herself to the utmost to catch his answer, but it was in vain. Of the remainder of the colloquy one fact alone was plain to Anne, and that only inductively, that Miss Aldclyffe, from what he had revealed to her, was going to scheme body and soul on Manston's behalf. Miss Aldclyffe seemed now to have no further reason for remaining, yet she lingered a while, as if loth to leave him. When, finally, the crestfallen and agitated lady made preparations for departure, Anne quickly inserted the bolt, ran round to the entrance archway, and down the steps into the park. Here she stood close to the trunk of a huge lime tree, which absorbed her dark outline into its own. In a few minutes she saw Manston, with Miss Aldclyffe leaning on his arm, cross the glade before her, and proceed in the direction of the house. She watched them ascend the rise and advance, as two black spots, towards the mansion. The appearance of an oblong space of light in the dark mass of walls denoted that the door was opened. Miss Aldclyffe's outline became visible upon it, the door shutter in, and all was darkness again. The form of Manston returning alone arose from the gloom, and passed by Anne in her hiding place. Waiting outside a quarter of an hour longer, that no suspicion of any kind might be excited, Anne returned to the old manor house. 4. From 8 to 11 o'clock p.m., Manston was very friendly that evening. It was evident to her, now that she was behind the scenes, that he was making desperate efforts to disguise the real state of his mind. Her terror of him did not decrease. They sat down to supper, Manston still talking cheerfully. But what is keener than the eye of a mistrustful woman? A man's cunning is to it as was the armor of Sisera to the thin tent nail. She found, in spite of his adroitness, that he was attempting something more than a disguise of his feeling. He was trying to distract her attention, that he might be unobserved in some special movement of his hands. What a moment it was for her then! The whole surface of her body became attentive. She allowed him no chance whatever. We know the duplicated condition at such times, when the existence divides itself into two, and the ostensibly innocent chatterer stands in front, like another person, to hide the timorous spy. Manston played the same game, but more palpably. The meal was nearly over when he seemed possessed of a new idea of how his object might be accomplished. He tilted back his chair with a reflective air, and looked steadily at the clock standing against the wall opposite to him. He said sententiously, "Few faces are capable of expressing more by dumb show than the face of a clock. You may see in it every variety of incentive, from the softest seductions to negligence to the strongest hints for action." Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, in what way? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she inquired. His drift was, as yet, quite unintelligible to her. Why, for instance? Look at the cold, methodical, unromantic, business-like air of all the right-angled positions of the hands. They make a man set about work in spite of himself. Then look at the piquant shyness of its face, when the two hands are over each other. Several attitudes imply ache ready. The ache ready of 10 minutes to one differs from the ache ready of 10 minutes to 12, as youth differs from age. Toward and onward says 25 minutes to 11. Midday or midnight expresses distinctly it is done. You surely have noticed that? Apostrophe, yes, I have. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he continued with affected quaintness. The easy dash of 7:10, the rakish recklessness of 15:15, the drooping weariness of 25:25, must have been observed by everybody. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whatever amount of truth there may be, there is a good deal of imagination in your fancy, apostrophe, she said. He still contemplated the clock. Then, again, the general finish of the face has a great effect upon the eye. This old-fashioned brass-faced one we have here, with its arched top, half-moon slit for the day of the month, and ship rocking at the upper part, impresses me with the notion of its being an old cynic, elevating his brows, whose thoughts can be seen wavering between good and evil. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a thought now enlightened her. The clock was behind her, and he wanted to get her back turned. She dreaded turning, yet, not to excite his suspicion, she was on her guard. She quickly looked behind her at the clock as he spoke, recovering her old position again instantly. The time had not been long enough for any action whatever on his part. Ah, apostrophe, he casually remarked, and at the same minute, began to pour her out a glass of wine. Speaking of the clock, has reminded me that it must nearly want winding up. Remember that it is wound tonight. Suppose you do it at once, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, there was no possible way of evading the act. She resolutely turned to perform the operation. Anything was better than that he should. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.